broken.
I can't believe I started recording at the end of that. What a waste.
Yeah, that's what you get. What you get when you record too late.
Yeah, sometimes I just regret that I don't, like, record this all the time. Like a real creep. Like, have a backup recording that I'm doing in the background. That'd be fun.
What, a record of a record?
A recorder of a record. That's right. Cordception.
Yeah, it's too many chords. Yeah, nope. Too much.
Too much. Too much.
Kick him into a tub. What? Isn't that part of Inception?
Did they kick him into a tub? I'm not gonna lie. It's been a minute since I've seen Inception. Just a minute.
I know, okay. But are you still wondering? Are you still waking up like me in the middle of the night wondering, did that top spinning? Did it the top stop?
Well, let me tell you. No. No, I just wake up due to crippling pain in my arms. So
that's not good.
I'd much rather wake up and be like, oh, the top, is it still spinning? Versus, oh, both my arms hurt. What position can I get into to alleviate said pain?
That's fair.
Can I turn right or left? But more importantly, is that top still spinning?
Is that top still spinning to this day? Was he in the lair of dream or not?
Let's go. Pop soda. You know we gotta keep it hype all day and night like this. Pop soda. Showing love when we can. Shout out to the super fans, Pop soda. You don't really wanna miss Pop Soccer. Stay lit. Pop soda. So if you ready, we ride and take it back to the 90s. From movies to the video games, just a couple of nerds keep it so entertaining. Hey, Pop Saga.
That's right. Hello, friends, and welcome to Pop Saga, the only podcast that can survive an atomic explosion by being so insignificant that the wall of fire doesn't even bother. Today, we're going to be giving our impressions on the pilot of the latest game-to-TV adaptation, Fallout. So grab your bottles of Nuka-Cola or Sunset Sarsaparilla and get ready to head into the wasteland with us. I'm Forrest, and I'm joined, as always, by John. And John, I've got just one question for you. If you were in Fallout, what faction would you be a part of? Raiders, Brotherhood of Steel, Vault Dwellers, Ghouls? What do you got?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't want to be a Brotherhood of Steel, just because they seem a little too dogmatic for me.
A little too aggro, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, it's a flashlight.
All right.
You know what I mean? Like, what are you going around? So I don't really care about that. I couldn't be a ghoul, because I like chicken too much. So.
If you were a feral ghoul, you'd like chicken
too much.
Too much, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I want to avoid it. So I want to be ghoul. I don't think I'm wallpaper. I don't think I'd make it through Fallout, but I guess I'd like to be a vault dweller. Why not?
Yeah.
The origin starting class, you know. Raider, nah. Maybe automaton. That'd be cool. Could I be a robot?
Yeah, sure. You can be one of those ones with a brain. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to be a robot.
Right on. Yeah. A synth, maybe?
Yeah, sure.
Would you be transformed into a synth?
Yeah. Give me something like real tragic that turned me into a synth. Yeah, you know, like I was late on my car insurance or something, and they're like, "Well, you're going into this robot golem type thing. Good luck." I was like, "Oh no, my brain." Yeah,
cool. I love it. It's already its own spinoff. I mean,
yeah. How about you? I got one question to ask you, Forrest. Which faction would you be in Fallout? Raiders, Vault Dwellers, Brotherhood of Steel, a mutant? You want to be super mutant? You want to be a ghoul? You want to be the radiated bears? The Utai or something like that?
Yeah. That's
you want to be one of them?
I don't know. Those boils are pretty good.
Yeah, they do look juicy.
Sure do. They look juicy, and I do love a juicy boil.
Yeah, I know this about you.
Yep. Well, I mean, if you didn't, you do now. I think I would be a skeleton.
Nice.
I think I would be one of the skeletons with clothes on that you see just in a car or just at a table doing something where they're like, oh, that's right, what they were doing when they were vaporized. I am pretty sure I would be a comical skeleton.
I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, that's where I'd live, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd like to be something cool, but I ain't making it. I just know I ain't making it. Like, it's just not happening. Not that I wouldn't try, just I don't have the wherewithal.
I would probably have joined the NCR.
Okay.
And then would just be one of the grubby foot soldiers that you come across.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I think that's about as much as I'd aspire to. Either that or a skeleton. That would be me in the universe of Fallout, I think.
Well, if you're an NCR, you get like 3 hots and a cot, so that's not too bad.
It's not bad. I mean, as morally gray organizations go, you could do worse.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I'm liking this. Maybe I could be just one of like those the little bobbleheads.
Sure, yeah, you could be a vault. You could be like a little Pip-Boy bobblehead or a...
People say my head's big enough to be a bobblehead, so.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Everyone's saying that all the time.
Look at that bobblehead of his. John, you should have been bobblehead. And I was like, one day Funko, look at me.
One day Funko, look at me. That's the secret. I don't get the money, but the Funko's based on my bodily proportions. The creator of Funko saw me and they were like, great Scott, I have a great idea. But I never saw a cent.
That's right.
You know, speaking of not getting money, I was going to try to segue. It all fell apart. But
I believe in you. You got it.
On Friday, I was at the Seattle Aquarium.
Okay.
And first of all, no shade on the Seattle Aquarium, but growing up in Northern California and having the Monterey Bay Aquarium be the aquarium that you frequent really ruins you in terms of like going to other aquariums, I think. I think it's wildly seen as one of the best, and yeah. Anyway, Seattle Aquarium. There it was.
All right, you're at this Seattle Aquarium, not Monterey.
Nope, not Monterey. Still cool. Still lots of really cool exhibits. But hard to match the scale of that one in California. But no, who's comparing? Either way, here I am at the Seattle Aquarium on the waterfront, and I'm wearing a sweater. This one's on me. I'm wearing a sweater that I got because I asked one Christmas that people donate to things that are meaningful to them,
mm-hmm.
Instead in lieu of giving me a gift, and so I was given this sweater as part of a reward for the donation, I assume, or just in further to donate to this cause. But anyway, it's called Defenders of Wildlife, so I was wearing that. It has a bunch of animal silhouettes on it, and I'm standing there. Got a Corona hat on though. I thought it would offset. You know what I mean?
No.
I have a Corona trucker hat on.
Sure.
It's all yellow and bold, and then I've got the Defenders of Wildlife. But either way. An old man is standing next to me. I am I'm sketching anemones in the touch tide pools, and this older man says something, and I'm not really paying attention because there is no fucking way he's talking to me.
Sure, you had your Corona hat on.
No, yep. And then he turns around and he looks at me dead in the eye, and he said, "Are you a biologist?" And I look at him and I say, nope, I'm not. And he looks back at the anemones and he points at him and he says, "I was wondering why this one was green. Do you know that?" And I said, "Nope, but it's pretty cool, right?" And that was the end of the conversation.
Oh, man, you could have grifted that, dude.
Oh, I should have. You know, were I not so socially awkward, there is a decent possibility I might have just been like, "Oh, yes, well, due to the way that they process and feed off of the sun's rays, you get the green coloration," or just make something up that is completely wrong because I have no idea. But no, nope. It's just a very awkward situation.
You're like, "Sorry, I wore an inappropriate shirt, I guess, for coming to the..."
Well, it kind of looked like I was trying to be a part of it. I'm like, "I'm going to go to the aquarium and show everybody how much I love animals." Which, listen, I do love animals. And I
obviously,
do
you own the shirt.
Of course, yeah. And I support any charity that's helping animals out. But yeah. You know, yeah, and then later... An employee of the aquarium walked past me staring at my sweater, and he said, "Oh, Defender of what?" Here's the thing, too. Oh, my God. I am dying of embarrassment now that I'm thinking about it. I was wearing a crossbody bag that was blocking out the S. So I think what it said on my sweater is Defender of Wildlife. Like, I'm a damn superhero. It's because an employee of the employee of the aquarium walked by and was literally like, "Defenders of Wildlife, okay."
Look at him. I bet you's got a symbol and everything.
It does kind of have a symbol on it. Oh my gosh, that is just occurring to me live. Well, congratulations, everyone out there. Please don't die of secondhand embarrassment to the funny things that happened to me at the Seattle Aquarium. Boise.
I love it. I love the fact that you're there wearing your superhero vigilante outfit.
Yeah.
And you didn't take the time to be like, it's because they eat green algae. They like green algae and it turns them green.
Yeah. That,
anyway,
man.
23 Skidoo.
Yep. They eat a species of krill that are actually have blue shells, and that pigmentation makes these normally yellow amoebas more of a green. And of course, they just call them amoebas, which they aren't. They're anemones.
Yeah, but he wouldn't know.
Yeah, right. He's like, "Wow, are you a biologist?"
Hey, that's look, I've done that. Like, I've gone to, like, events. You know, I had to dress up, wear a suit and everything, and sometimes I'd be standing in the lobby somewhere, and people would be like, "Are you security?" And sometimes I'd be like, "No, I'm here for an event," or, you know, I'm like, "No." But sometimes I'm like, "Yeah, what can I do for you?" And then usually it'll be something like, "Where's the bathroom?" And I just point over to where I think the bathroom is, and they go there, even if I'm wrong. Sometimes you just gotta just invest in the lie that they've generated for you by judging you based off of what you're wearing.
Yeah, and it is funny that you say that, because I do get asked a lot if I work at the places that I go to. I guess I might have just one of those faces, but if I wear, God forbid I wear a Hawaiian shirt to a Trader Joe's.
Oh, no, but you're like in your element at a Trader Joe's.
That's true. I probably could direct the person to the right place.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if it's like the booze section.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. I'm very well acquainted.
Yeah, I know. That's not even me browbeating it. I just know. I know I can be like, which of these do you recommend? You'd be like, "Oh, well, I've had them all. Let me tell you which Trader Joe's beverage is good for you." Mm.
I live where I live, at least it due in part to its proximity to Trader Joe's.
That's the most modern Popeye-ism I've ever heard.
What are you talking about?
I live where I live. It's like almost like I am's what I am.
I lives where I lives.
I lives. because of the Trader Joe's.
I got to be close to the Trader Joe's. I don't know why it's a pirate now, but it is.
I don't know. I can't do Popeye. You can't do Popeye. Yeah, that's what we both got.
I got to get some Trader Joe's.
Is that kind of what was that? You started to go into like a little Marlon Brando.
Doing a little... Marlon Brando.
I could have been a contender.
I could have went to Trader Joe's.
I could have got the peanut butter filled pretzels.
I don't know. Really struggling to come up with a single item.
I gotta get my hands on that orange chicken.
No, I can't.
The orange chicken.
Yeah, I'm just tearing my throat. Two pizzas. But, come on. It's time. It's time to talk about drinks. Speaking of Trader Joe's, which actually has nothing to do with what I'm going to talk about tonight, but it's everybody's favorite segment, what everybody tunes into the podcast for. That's right. It is, what are you enjoying this evening? John, why don't you tell us what's in your wallet?
What's in my wallet? Nothing. What's in my hand is the penultimate beer from my beers waiting. Of the world.
I've been waiting since last week to find out what this mystery beer is that you teased on last episode.
Well, I know it's a beer you've had.
Huh?
So it's not like it's a world beer for sure, but it's well known. It is imported from Japan, and it's a Sapporo. Sapporo.
Okay.
When you want a beer of the world, that's what they throw in a box.
Yeah, it's interesting, because when you think of beers of the world, you're like, this is probably something I can't just get at the Safeway.
Yeah, that's what you're looking for. Like, if you're going to give me a beer of the world box, I'm wanting beers that, I can't go to a Safeway, a Vons, a Lucky, a grocery outlet for. Like, I'm hoping to try something new, but nope, Sapporo. And this one was brewed in Canada. So, it's still international, but take that what you will.
Nice. Yeah, great. That's exactly what I want to do. I want to think I'm taking a trip to Japan and then end up in Canada.
Nothing
wrong with Canada, of course, but it would be odd.
If you need me to describe it's a Sapporo, it tastes like a Sapporo. So, a little light, not too crazy. Not really crazy aftertaste. It's cold, so I got that going for me. And I just wish I had accompanying food to eat this with. To drink this with, because it'd be pretty good. It does pair well with, Japanese food.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. Totally crushable, that one.
Yep. So, I'm not mad at it. Well, I am. I'm not mad at Sapporo. I'm mad at the beers of the world people for not like stretching a little bit to get me like Kirin, even like give me the other Japanese beer brand that not everyone knows about. You know what I mean? Like, let's try. But it's a tasty beer, and so I'll be okay.
You're gonna be okay.
Yeah, I'll be all right. That's what's in my bottle. What's in your? I don't know. Thimble.
That's right. That's right. As everyone knows, I've been shrunk down to the size of a mouse. No, sorry. Sorry, anyone who was hoping that was the truth. It's not. No, I instead have a Paloma, which, as you may know, is grapefruit soda and tequila. You know, a glass with a wedge of lime. Bad news is this Italian pink grapefruit soda is most certainly flat.
Oh, no. Oh, no, not a flat soda.
It's a big bottle. Yeah, it's a big bottle, so you open it up, and it sits in the fridge, but it is open. And granted, I got it, like, yesterday, but it doesn't matter. The damage has been done.
Yeah, it happens. But, I mean, how's it taste? Even if it being flat.
It's delicious, John! It's delicious! Actually, I lied earlier. My grapefruit soda is from Trader Joe's, believe it or not. So it does have something to do with Trader Joe's, just the tequila does not.
I was nice buying some, segue.
I was buying some gifts for my colleagues, the place which I am employed. And it was at the wine and stuff, whatever it's called. Wine, etc.
Wine and things.
Beer, wine, and just a lot of stuff. Man, there's a lot of pricey booze out there at the store.
With
Wine Depot. What is it called? Bevno Wine? What,
BevMo? Or
no, it's not
BevPro.
No, it's, what, beverages, of course it's not.
Total
you
Wine?
You know, Bev, it's Total Wine. There we go, Total Wine. Thank
I mean, there are multiple places that sell booze. Like, I could have gone through a couple, but Beverages and More, BevMo. People go there still, right?
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, it's one place, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I mean, not two places. There's not a Beverages and More and a BevMo.
No, I just figured maybe you're just like, I don't know, old and just only know it by its full name.
I am old.
Yeah,
yes,
I know
no,
this.
But I have a BevMo. Listen. I have a BevMo tag on my keychain, and that's not a BevMo for 20 miles around. I never go.
Well, we know where your priorities set.
That's right, you Total Wine. I'm back.
You want to be closer to a Trader Joe's, but further away from the BevMo. That's on you, not on me. And
yeah,
I know about your keys, so don't hold that against me.
Anyway, Total Wine. Choose it over BevMo every time.
Only because of distance.
That's true. That's true. I don't know where there is a BevMo near, but maybe I should look. Why would I look? Why would I care? I've got a Total Wine.
It's the same thing, sort of.
They're constantly doing tastings. Every time you go in, there's a kiosk in the middle. They're doing tastings. And I'm like, and people are just posted up. Getting sloshed. Searching for alcohol, getting tanked.
Oh, that makes sense, though. Look, even you can go through a Costco, you're not picking up all the samples. There's gonna be something there. You're like, I know what Windex smells like. I don't need to sample this. You know
what is? That would be great if they gave you a small square of glass and then some Windex in a little paper cup and a little like paper towel. They're like, try it out. It's a sample size. Like, what do I do with the glass? It's got garbage bags filled with glass shards.
It's these little glass shards and paints. Like, isn't this expensive? We're Costco.
Whatever, man. Who knows how we do the magic we do with prices? Who knows how we give you this much food for this little money? We'll never tell what alchemy goes in it and how we can get so many little glass watches for you to test out your Windex on. My God. Is this still the drink segment?
You've been away from it for a while. Your Paloma was good. My beer was normal but adequate.
Yeah. It's too bad you don't have... It's too bad you don't have... like some edamame right there in front of you.
Oh, that'd be good. Imagine I got Excedrin.
That would be audio poison. Can you imagine? Just sucking one of those green beans out of that fuzzy casing.
Oh, that'd be nasty. Like, I'd hit myself. All the mouth noises. Oh, that was salty. And that would just happen randomly.
Is that what happens when you go out to sushi? You get a little edamame. You're just like from the corner table. Oh, that's
oh, that's salty. That didn't have enough salt. Needs more flavor. Mm. That one's cold. Why is this one super hot? What are you doing over there? Yeah, that's usually me.
That John, he loves to be the center of attention.
That is true. That is true.
Oh, yes, but, I mean, I guess we should get into what we came here to talk about, should we not?
Yeah, unless what are we talking about?
Unless you have any embarrassing social interactions of your own, if you want to share, kind of balance the scales.
No, I'm not that awkward, that comes down to it. I mean, I went to...
Well, good for you.
You tell me if this accounts for a weird social interaction. We went out for a friend's birthday this past weekend. mm-hmm. and we did like a high like afternoon tea. And it was real nice and stuff like this. But the person who worked there kind of judged me because I was a dude and thought that afternoon tea was silly.
Oh, really?
And yeah. And I was just like, and I just sat there and looked at her and she's like, oh yeah, everyone thinks that, you know, like guys think afternoon tea is, you know, it's for women and all this. And I'm just going like, I'm now, Forrest, just to give you an idea of what I'm wearing a Golden Girls t-shirt.
Yeah.
Plus a Hawaiian shirt that Tiny got for me for my birthday that has Betty White's face all over it.
That's great. Very on brand.
My outfit was very on brand for me, but more importantly, I think screams afternoon tea.
Sure. Yeah, I guess. Like, I don't know what it is. I still don't know what, if you have to fit an archetype to go have what sounds like a lovely time.
I had a great time. Tea was lovely. The food was tasty. Everything was good.
What'd you have? What'd you have?
Well, see, you get your choice. You either pick a plate, but, you know, we all were, like, part of the afternoon tea experience. We all got tea for one, and that comes with, like, a pot of tea and the tower. But, you know, we had, like, a few of us, so they split a couple of towers. So I had a turkey cranberry sandwich. Ooh. I had a real English, like, you know, crumpets. Not English muffins, not the weird things that we get over here. Yeah. These were crumpets. No, these were real crumpets, real scones, blueberry scones. And they had
a scone, you say?
Yeah, they had a lemon curd, a strawberry jam, and a clotted cream. So
clotted cream. So you know it's authentic.
Yeah. Then they had a bunch of shit with cheese on it, so they didn't eat any of that. But then I was able to snag a couple of, because the other tower had a couple of the I forget what they call them, but they're like effectively a curry chicken sandwich.
That sounds good.
I think it's called like Imperial Chicken or something. Like I made them once for Tanya's birthday. But those were good. And then the tea was lovely. A little Earl Grey, had a little of their blend, which was just like, I think, Earl Grey and English breakfast mixed together. A lovely jasmine tea. Had a great time. But the whole time, every time she kept coming over, kept talking about how, like, I should be okay with this, even though I'm there. I'm drinking. I'm participating. So then when we were leaving and taking, you know, pictures, and she's like, yeah, see, so this is your first time, I bet, so how do you like it? And I was like, well, for like not my first time, this was great. I've been doing this type of thing for years. You shouldn't judge a book by its rose garland covered shirt.
Did you actually say that last part?
No, I thought it in my head.
Yeah,
but there you go. That was my weird social interaction.
Yeah, that's kind of, that's not fun. That's weird, right? Yeah, to assume that. I don't know why you would. That seems very weird, the thing to assume.
It was, like, I was just like, oh, come on. Like, I'm not going to give you my whole life's history, but I grew up watching Are You Being Served? I've been to afternoon tea. I've been to high tea. I've been to all the teas that people serve in the noons.
Right, and also crumpets rule. So yeah, how about, let's just talk about how crumpets rule and scones rule and tea is fine.
I forgot you hate tea. That's right, I forgot.
I never said, I don't hate tea.
I forgot you hate tea, yeah.
I don't hate tea at all.
You said it before. You're like, oh, tea, it's just. It's
I prefer
just
coffee. You're just what like, can I say? I like coffee, just a black coffee.
No, I remember you were like, oh, how can you drink that leaf piss? You know, it's just like, come on, man, it's tea.
You said that a few times. You get very
crude about it, to be honest, if I remember.
I never said leaf piss.
Yeah, I remember one time you slapped a cup of tea out of my hand. You were like, get that out of here.
It's like, get that leaf piss out of my face.
You're like, in 1776, we got rid of tea for good. Fuck? Yeah, I remember you were saying all that stuff. Yeah, remember?
I don't think that was the point of that, the whole thing.
Yeah, it's because a bunch of people are like, we don't want tea anymore.
I don't think that's a thing. I don't think that's why that whole thing happened. But that's fun. That's a fun fiction for me. A tea asshole. That's a fun new dimension to my character, which I like I'm very much here for. Yeah, no, I mean, I think tea is great in general, but I end up drinking coffee a lot. It does, coffee is, to a certain extent, like a challenge for yourself.
Oh,
I don't
think,
maybe I'm just, maybe I am alone in this opinion, or maybe this is just something people have all agreed to sort of collectively share, you know, their discomfort with silently. But coffee is a little, like, it's just bitter. There are other flavors, of course, but there's a lot of bitter there. And so you are, and granted, I'm not making it easier on myself. I could put cream, I could put sugar in my coffee, but I do not, for whatever. I like the flavor, but is it the same as, like, when you drink an IPA and you're like, like, there's a lot about this that is disagreeing with me. There's, like, a lot about this that my body is like, this is probably poison.
Yeah, where you're like, I shouldn't be drinking this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. There's also obviously the other ravages that coffee will do to you, for sure.
There is a bit of urgency, okay? Yeah. There's a bit of urgency that is created by the ingestion of coffee. I agree.
Yeah, just it comes from it. Like, I mean, when did you shift from, oh, this will be a good thing because we're definitely, yeah, we'll get to Fallout eventually. When did you notice or when did you stop drinking coffee with milk and sugar? Because usually the gateway is maybe you're like a kid and you're given a cup of coffee or something, but it's loaded with sugar and milk and that's how you think it is. When did you make the decision to shift away from that?
That's a great question. Because you're right. When I was first introduced to coffee, it was through the sort of gateway drug of a mocha, which is like a chocolate milkshake with coffee that coffee happens to have showed up at.
Yeah.
It's a hot chocolate milkshake where coffee is just like, hey, I'm here too.
Yeah. No, I mean, when I heard Intergalactic by the Beastie Boys and they're like, I like my sugar with coffee and cream. I was just like, yeah, that's how I used to drink my coffee.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, just loaded with sugar. I didn't never want to taste coffee. But yeah, when were you like, you know what? Never again.
I think it's like it coincided. Well, coffee is a weird one for me because there was a long time where I just couldn't drink it. I couldn't stomach it. And it really played havoc with the whole inside situation of my body. Then I kind of eased back into it maybe like 7 or 8 years ago. And when I eased back into it, I went like just easy on the other stuff.
Okay. So you were like light creamer, light sugar type of thing.
Absolutely. And then eventually, like, I believe it was one of the times where I was dedicated to losing weight, there was just you couldn't have either. And so I just went with black coffee, and then I kind of developed a taste for it. And then, like, I started being like, oh, I'm an Americano guy. I'll have an Americano every time I go anywhere. And that kind of became my personality, and now I can't go back.
Well, I'm happy that we both have that same personality. So we've both literally landed at the same point.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I was cream and sugar all the way, always. Like, there was never enough packets of sugar in the at the diner. And then at some point in my 30s, I was like, you know what? I'm done. No more milk, no more sugar, just coffee. If I can't drink coffee this way, that means I just don't like coffee. So it took a little bit to adjust to it, but now I'm totally on board. I don't need cream and sugar in it all. I actually prefer it without it. But now I am the, oh, hey, we're going to order some, you know, like we're going to order coffee somewhere. What do you want? I'm like, oh, give me an Americano, please.
Every time, of course. It's a shot of espresso with hot water. It brings out the true flavor of the coffee. Oh, terrific. Love it.
So I'm happy here that we at least landed in the same thing, even though you don't like tea.
I like tea fine. Listen,
I didn't hear that.
I like tea
folks. Comment. Come to our Discord. Tell us that you heard how much of a tea hater.
I love green tea. Listen, I want the record to show I love green tea. I love that it sort of tastes like rotten eggs, just a little bit.
Oh my God, you heathen! You heathen!
I love that it tastes like a hot boiled egg. Just
not even remotely.
It's like it's got some lemony. It's got a lemony flavor, but then there's like a real sulfur kick.
No, my Lord, no! Oh my God! I don't think I can continue. I can't do this.
Yeah.
I can't do this at all.
Listen,
I'm listening, but I just don't want to hear it.
We've all got different taste buds. We all got different perspectives, and that's what makes the world go round. Okay.
Yeah. So let's sets the world on fire.
Yes. Well, John, I would tell you, but I don't want to set the world on fire. What I want to do is talk about Fallout, Amazon Prime Studios. Fallout. Is it Amazon Prime Studios? Or is it just Amazon Studios?
I think it's just Amazon Studios. Or maybe it's Prime Studios. I don't know why you'd lead with Prime. I'd lead with Amazon.
Yeah, you'd lead with the brand, right? Yeah,
that's how I'd go about it. But, you know, people are weird sometimes.
But it's on Prime, though.
It's on Prime. It is on Prime.
Oh, I'm so conflicted. What kind of advice do we give to Bezos?
What advice you want to give him? Give us showrunner positions and let us come up with something that we like a lot, and then let us do a show.
Yeah, can we get a development deal?
Yeah, like a 10 picture or mixed media type of deal. It's TV shows.
Yeah, maybe leave a
documentary.
It open. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. Like real flexible, so we can kind of deliver whenever.
Yeah, you know, just like something for you. We'll take at least the first 3 to 5 years to do a lot of study.
Listen, we'll take a 3 to 5. Just a 3 to 5.
Yeah, and by the time we're 10 years in, we'll finally get you something, Bezos. No problem.
Decade guarantee. That's what we call it.
Yeah. Decade guarantee. I like it.
That's right. By 10 years, we'll have something for you. Will it be good? Will it be what you want? I don't know. But it'll be something. Guarantee it. In a decade. Just a little short little decade. If you got $1 billion, a decade is no time at all. That's how time works.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of billions.
Yeah, that's right. And don't believe me? Well, why don't you listen to a little someone called Albert Einstein? That's right. Time dilation. Anyway, gotta go. We're looking for that check, though, Bezo.
We'll be knocking on your door at one of your homes somewhere.
That's right. We'll check back in. We're going to circle back in a week and see if we got that check. Mercy. It's just Amazon Studios, John. It's Amazon Studios. Amazon and MGM Studios.
Yeah, I forgot they bought MGM.
That's right. They bought up MGM, and then that all of a sudden imbued them with the ability to create these wonderful TV shows, like the one we're talking about today. 2024's adaptation of the video game of the same name, Fallout.
Yeah. That's it.
It's said, John, that war never changes.
Yeah, bullshit. You know why? No Ron Perlman. War changes.
Yeah, that was an interesting choice. Maybe they couldn't afford him. Maybe he wanted, I don't know what was the deal there. But you would think that it would start with War Never Changes. Now, that would have actually, I think, been worse than what we actually got, to be honest. As much as I would have liked it, I have to tell you, John.
We don't need to see Ron Perlman. We just need to hear him
say
it. No,
no, I know.
That's all I need.
A voiceover, yeah. But, John, I don't know how you felt, but I felt such extreme existential dread with this opening. Before I get started, can we invoke the spoiler witch, please?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I got you.
Because we're going to spoil the shit out of this pilot.
Well, you are. I don't remember shit. Anyway, here we go.
Spoilers, spoilers, double boilers.
Yeah, cauldrons I watched
burn
it.
And secrets bubble. Of course, in the rites and passages handed down to us by our ancestors, the spoiler witch has been invoked, and we will be safe tonight.
Yeah, well, we're safe. We're covered.
Spoiler witch. I'm adding a new bit onto the end, okay?
Okay.
Give
me that one more time. I'm not going to say anything. Give me that one more time.
Okay, here we go. We're going to do it clean.
Spoiler witch.
All right, we're good.
Okay, great. Now the incantation is finally complete, and we will be very handily protected from the spoiler witch, of course, that lives under our collective beds. But we are not here to talk about our own mythology. No, we are here to talk about Fallout. 53 minutes in of recording time, and we're finally getting to the subject of today's podcast. So John, full disclosure here, we're here to talk about our impressions of the pilot, but yours truly, Forrest of Pop Saga fame, has been continually watching this show one a night since it debuted, and so I'm pretty much up there. I think I have two more episodes left.
Okay. Well, I mean, I've watched the first one. I've watched the first two.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent.
So, but you know, I figure you're the driver here. You're the Mr. Handy. So just take us through this.
Am I really? Okay. We're here to just talk about the pilot because you know what? That's what I wrote.
It's true. It says Fallout pilot impressions. So
that's right.
That is what it is. For those who want to know, Forrest names all the episodes. So
that's right. So if you ever had a problem with it, that's one of the ones that John did. John, can you tell us a little bit about your history with Fallout, the video game? Because, of course, this is not one of those properties that has books and all sorts of other media that have fed into a video game adaptation and then eventually a TV series. No, this is, much like Last of Us, an adaptation of the source material, but in a very novel way, because it's not based on any one game. But as far as the games go, John, do you have a history with it? Have you played the other Fallouts? Are you a Fallout fan?
Yeah, well, let's say I've played a little bit of 3, and I played a little bit of 4, and I played a little bit of 76. And I found that most of the time, I find a point in the game where I'm just like, if I was a character living in this world and that's where I got to, I'd be okay with that life. And then I have almost no want and desire to see anything else.
So you get a point. You get to a point in the game where you're like, I would settle down here. And thus I have lost interest in this game. And I bid you adieu.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, in a way, I would say that you are missing out on a lot of amazing story moments and content and gameplay. But in another way, I have to say I have deep respect and admiration for your commitment to the bit in terms of just pure role-playing. Because you say, hey, I am inhabiting this character. And at this point in my character story, if I were confronted with these options, I would just be like, great. I'm going to buy this little shit house on this is the corner of these two dirt roads and just live my life in this post-apocalypse. And that is way more preferable than putting myself in any more danger. I love it.
Exactly. The third one, it's when I saved, what was it, Megaton?
Uh-huh.
And they're like
right at the start.
Pretty much at the start when you save them and they're like, hey, you get a house here. And it was like, okay, cool. That means I don't need to walk around the waste no more. It's a pretty well thought. And I was like, I had dog meat. I had like everything I needed. I was just like, I got my dog. I got a house. People seem to generally like me here. Why the hell else would I go fight rad scorpions and shit? I'm good. And so I literally just stopped playing, uninstalled, and that was it.
Uninstalled! That's the best part where you're like, listen, game, go kick rocks. I never want to see you again. I'll never play you again.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. And then the same thing happened to 4. I think they were trying to get me to build some sort of town, and I was like, I ain't doing that.
No. Yeah, I'm done. Listen, I didn't love that part.
I was like, I want to do that. No, I just want to go around and fight weird shit. But I was like, I don't really even care about the story, but the story keeps coming to me. So that was the end of that. And then I reshifted my goal to where I got a suit of power armor. Then I was like, okay, can I steal like 2 more suits of power armor? And I did. And I was like, well, I'm power armor rich. This is a good place to stop. Had my dog.
Yeah.
I was good. Stop. Uninstalled. Yep. And then 76 was like, oh, this isn't the same game. I mean, it is. It's like a very modded version of 4. But for some strange reason, they just took all the menus, put them in a hat, shook them around, then dumped them into the settings, and I couldn't figure out how to play it. So I uninstalled after that the first day, and I was like, I'm never playing again.
But wow. You have a very interesting history with this game.
Now, look, this is all me, truly my own opinion on this, but like generally, Bethesda games for me are harder to get into the most. Because they do give you a lot of options. And I find that sometimes there's too many options for me. And it's a little too paralyzing because how big it is. So I just like, I just stopped. And that started even before me playing any of the Fallout games. That started actually with Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. That was the first time I was like, this game's too big. I'm good. I'm happy. I would be content as this character. And I don't role play for shit. So the fact that that's like the excuse that I give myself to stop playing something, that's what I do. But I think the world building and everything that they have done with Fallout is really, you know, it's like prime post-apoc stuff. So in that regards, I'm fairly familiar and, you know, you can't go around without a meme. So that's kind of my whole, that's my history with Fallout.
And what a history it is.
Yeah. Versus you, where you're like, I play him every day, and I've been playing the same game for 20 years, and it's been amazing.
Well, that is like whenever you and I would play WoW together, we were like the odd couple, because I love like getting immersed in something and reading all the quest text and really trying to like imagine myself in this world. And you're like, "What? Come on! Let's go! We got a goal to do."
Yep.
Very goal oriented. So I could definitely see why a game with that is like just kind of open to you. Kind of doing the game version of jazz where you're just like, bop, I'm going over here. I'm just going to go in this weird cave I found would be less satisfying. That makes total sense to me.
Yeah, it's just, again, me. I don't know when that clicked in my head, but most games, I'm like, I don't care about the story. Because most of the time I'm like, I don't really care about the people here. So the story, you know, there are games that I enjoy the story too, but like most of them,
it's gotta
just like,
really hook you.
Yeah, it's gotta get me, or it's gotta be something that I am like steeped in. Like the Spider-Man games, I love them stories, but I love Spider-Man, so it's easy for me to like want to play through and see everything. God of War, same thing. I just, at this point, I grew up with Kratos, so playing as Kratos, great. Story's great for what it is and stuff. When it kind of comes down to the other ones, I'm just like, oh, this seems kind of aimless. Like, first I make my slightly ugly-looking character, and then I head out to the desert or, wherever I'm at, and then eventually you either clip through the ground or you find a dog and a home, and then
and you just
like,
quit.
I just quit.
And you uninstall. Yeah, no, I get it. And you are right about me. I definitely played. I am a huge Fallout fan and have been playing since the very first one. Played the more tactics focused version. Played Fallout Brotherhood of Steel. I think it was called. It was like a top down shooter for the consoles. Played all sorts of Fallout. Enjoyed 76. Enjoyed it a lot actually when there were no NPCs. Just kind of enjoyed following. Traipsing around post-apocalyptic West Virginia, I think.
Yes.
Or just Fallout 76. Virginia. Yeah. And all the landmarks and stuff. Really just like love the aesthetics, love the world. I'm a huge fan. Have hundreds and hundreds of hours invested in all of them. So this I was excited about this series, but I'm about as enfranchised as of a fan as you can get of this entire world, and so
yeah,
I was excited
biased,
but
wary.
Weary. I was wary. Yeah.
How?
Because
you
will be. Yeah, because please. I mean, like, I had high expectations for this show.
It's
a beloved property.
We gotta beat that out of you. Just set your expectations low, so then when it's even decent, you'd be like, well, it's the greatest show ever. You're going at it too hot.
Yeah.
Too hot.
Well, here's the thing, John. Am I? Because after I saw this pilot, it was one of the most interesting and exciting pilots I have seen in maybe a decade.
Yeah, I could see how you'd think that.
How dare you? What was your first impression? What did you come away with after seeing the pilot?
That's neat.
That's neat. Wow, you really have you have the same lukewarm reception of the TV show as you do the games.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. I liked the show more than the games.
Well, that's the thing, John, is that it is a brilliant... Now, I read this on IMDb. Who knows if it is true in the trivia section, but they said that Todd Howard, who is instrumental and in all of the like Skyrim and all of the modern Bethesda games, it was his idea to not adapt any one of the games and instead make it a wholly original tale just set in the same Fallout universe, and it is canon with the games, even though it doesn't directly adapt any of them, which is a masterstroke, especially for a IP that has this rich of world building. It may not work for every IP, but boy, they should really do this for more video game adaptations, because it really frees you from the confines of being super tied to a story that everyone already knows.
I mean, it does. But I feel like this series, or almost any Bethesda game, it benefits from this more than other game series would. Like, okay, we're doing a God of War TV show, but it has nothing to do with Kratos or his kid or any
of
that.
Yeah.
That'd be boring. It's like, and the worst part would be you'd hear an episode, oh, did you hear about what Kratos did to Zeus? Ripped his head off, shit down his neck. Whoa! Wish we could have seen that. But in this series, your character, your hero, your whoever, the person that you're playing as, story is developing as you're playing through, but you're not really, I won't say you're not really anyone of note. And I think that's why this one is a lot more successful. Like, I would have hated if they were just like, yeah, this is just Fallout 3. I don't want to watch that. I didn't want to play that. What makes you think I want to watch it?
I'm just going to stop at the episode where you get to save Megaton.
Pretty much. If I see a dog and Megaton and the same thing, I'm out. I'm good.
I'm out.
I've watched it. Oh, so episode and a half. So, well, it's a great episode and a half. So I think in this instance, this was the smart play, and I'm happy if indeed Tom Howard was like, you know what, just make it a story in the universe versus, oh, well, here's the plot to 3 or here's the plot to 4. Because arguably the plot to this one, it feels like it's almost a mashup of both plots, really.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit.
A little bit. I'm not saying like one-to-one, but like some of those elements that that drive, say, Lucy.
Yep, yeah, that's right.
They go out and about and stuff like that, feel remotely kind of connected story-wise or at least narrative-wise, but not actual plot-wise to either of those things. Now, I think that was the most successful part of this, and that made it easier to watch.
Sure, yeah. They both deal kind of from a high level. They both deal with something happening to your father, or your father absconding into the wasteland and you going to look for him. Both of the impetus for our vault dwelling hero to enter the wasteland are fathers who go on some sort of mysterious mission that you may not fully understand until the end. There are some similarities there, I think. It is, not, of course, as you mentioned, not a direct adaptation, but the similarities do kind of make it, I think, part of what you're saying is that they make the entire thing feel like a Fallout story from the get-go because it has similarities to the stories that have already existed.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, overall, I think, just not to bury the lead too much, but like overall that's what I think actually makes a successful show. I was just joshing earlier. I think it's what makes it a successful show is because it takes place in the world, but it's not like following one-to-one for a plot. It is doing its own thing, which is fine because that is kind of like that level of emergent gameplay that you can get from a Fallout game.
Mm-hmm.
Where, yeah. Usually you have your main story impetus and you're walking towards that, but afterwards you're going to meet a crazy cast of characters. They're all going to tell you different things you can do, and you can just go kind of out and about. And that's what I think made this, made me go like, oh, great. I'm so happy that, you have no idea. I was so happy that this was not like just one of the games.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a brilliant move. It frees you from having to hit certain story beats that might be awkward depending on how you're setting up the length and the characters in your TV show. It frees you from like fan expectation about like honoring certain scenes or characters or moments and like the disappointment that comes along with that. And it allows you... Well, here's the thing, though. If they hadn't nailed the aesthetics and the tone so masterfully in the show, then it could have easily still been a massive disappointment. But because it feels so authentic to the look, the feel, the tone of Fallout games, it is sort of like it's easy to welcome it as part of the official canon and just like experience a Fallout story, a really rich and interesting Fallout story in a way that you've never have before, is definitely like, it is a triumph, truly, that these creators have pulled off when making the show. It is, now, granted, I haven't seen The Last of Us. I hear it's very good. I don't really play those games all that much because I'm not good at stealth games, never have been. But this was just like, wow, to me, it really, because I haven't seen The Last of Us, this feels like such a radical exemplar of like how to correctly adapt, a video game universe. It's just, it's really impressive.
I mean, I would say for The Last of Us, I played the game first so I could then watch it And I started and I was like, oh, this is really good. That was a good adaptation, but that series is so character focused that, like, it, again, any departure from the initial characters that you meet in there would be met with, like, ugh, I don't know. Again, there's not the same level of expectations. Like, I can't, there are things in Fallout that are known to Fallout, but I couldn't really tell you characters who would be important to Fallout. You sure. know, like key characters. With Last of Us, it's all about characters, and I feel like that was very well done on the end. This is very well done for another reason, because Fallout does have such rich history and so many Easter eggs and so many things that, like, as competent of a director and writer as Jonathan Nolan is, he knows to pick up on that stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and, like, make sure that if we're going to show a poster, we're going to pull a poster from the game. If we're going to, you know, like, have a TV show on the TV, it's going to be of a character that people who play these game series know. You know, like the tertiary things, or we're going to show, you know, right. the vault dweller, like bobbleheads, and, you know, like all that stuff. And here are the Pip-Boys, and everything's going to be authentic because they have such a wealth to pull from. But I think, to your point, not in such capable hands, this could have gone terrible, like, really quickly.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to mess it up. And they didn't do any of them.
No, they didn't
fall into any of the pitfalls. In fact, like, from the moment this series gets started, or this episode, the pilot gets started, you are hooked in, because they cast an incredible casting decision. They cast the amazing Walter Goggins yeah. as Cooper Howard, this kind of over the hill cowboy movie star, who is doing a kid's birthday party for a rich couple in the Hollywood Hills. And because if you're a Fallout fan, or even if you're not, and you've just heard of it, you know what happens. So I don't know about you, but this entire opening scene, I was hit with such extreme existential dread for these characters the entire time. That, like, it is just like there's a tension there that I think honestly hits different these days than when I played Fallout in the past, that is so just palpable. I don't know if you were overtaken by this feeling, but I certainly was.
Well, I felt like I was on the I felt like I was part of the cool kids. Like, I knew what was coming. Right?
Sure.
Like, I could see some people watching this having no idea what was going to come next. You're like, oh, this party isn't going to end well at all. So like, I knew it was coming, but I will say that Walton Goggins, like, acting during this portion, I mean, during every party shows up in has been great. But this one was like, I really did think maybe they did, like, you know, drop the bombs in front of him type of thing. Like
oh,
the sheer
yeah.
terror and panic on his face and the realization as his character came, you know, like, came to realize what was happening, was that was alarming. That was the part that made me go, oh yeah, this would suck. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I have no words for it. It was just,
oh, yeah.
You know,
be terrifying.
It would be absolutely terrifying. And, you know, everything that was kind of done up until that point felt like it really was in service of building some tension for sure.
So, yeah, they kept having the TV shows on in the background, and they would be saying these horrible things, but then the characters would immediately turn them off and be like, we have to focus. Let's just have a party. They have, like, they're just trying to forget that the world is on a knife's edge. And I think that's something that we can always, that a lot of us can probably relate to.
Yeah, totes.
Like, everything's fine. It's just like the dog having coffee while everything's on fire. But I agree. His reaction, and just, I mean, even his daughter, her reaction was incredible, and like just that question, is it your thumb or mine? Because there's no way your thumb is going to cover that giant mushroom cloud was just so, oh.
So close.
I was hooked from that moment forward. And the first episode is really fun because it is just basically an introduction to the three your three main characters, which are Lucy, the Vault Dweller, Maximus, the Brotherhood of Steel, aspiring squire, eventually squire, and
Zach Cherry is Woody Thomas.
Zach Cherry is Woody. I love Zach Cherry from Severance.
He's been great a few. To see him. Yeah, I remember him being in Shang-Chi.
And Shang-Chi, of course. Yeah, wow. Shang-Chi.
Remember that movie?
We do. When's the second one going to come out? Waiting forever. Come on.
Yeah. Give me a little bit more.
That was good. Yeah. Do another one. And of course, the ghoul.
Yeah.
Also played by Walton Goggins.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to remember what movie this style of intro is from, where it's like, boom.
Like here's Pulp their Fiction? Name.
Maybe, yeah, maybe right. Yeah, it's like here's the chapter, here's the person. Like we're getting introduced to the main players, but it really is just kind of these three people on different axes that are all going to intertwine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have Maximus, who is like the lowest rung on the totem pole, is that the lowest? Is that the phrase? Either way,
I thought lowest rung on the ladder, but
the lowest rung on the ladder. What am I talking about? The lowest rung on the ladder, Maximus, who was just trying to gain back the power that was taken away from him during a traumatic part of his childhood. We have Lucy, who is the Vault Dweller. We spend the most time with Lucy during this first episode, her story is, I guess, if you've played the games, fairly typical. Things rarely go well in a vault. There's either some sort of, planned catastrophe or experiment that, really makes a bad day for your protagonists, or some external force ruins the vault. If you play these games, you go around, you come across all sorts of vaults, and they're almost always in a bad way.
Yeah. I mean, or it's not going to last. Like, your tranquility is going to go away within the first 20 minutes of whatever you're doing down there. I guess I have a question for you, since you are the... I'm like the jack of all trades.
Sure.
Pop culture. I like a little bit of everything, but I don't need to deep dive it. But you really know Fallout. Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a circumstance where there have been two vaults together,
like connected that? Like that?
Yeah.
Not that I can remember. That seems fairly unique. And there's the connected vaults. It seems unique to this series. I may be forgetting one from one of the games, but as far as I know, this like. And the exchange that happens, where you put yourself up as an eligible partner for someone you've never met from the other vault, in order to facilitate breeding, and that's in exchange for like a dowry of crops and technology, was a really, it was perfectly vault tech, it was perfectly Fallout, but very dystopian, in sort of that cheery, kind of retro futuristic way that Fallout loves to the space it loves to live in.
Yeah, I mean, this felt like, oh, this is everyone who has been doing nothing but trying to be nice their whole inside the vault anyway. Everyone doing nothing but trying to be nice, but at the end still wanting more or more power, mm-hmm. or so that. There's always like a hidden agenda underneath everyone's like forced smiles or togetherness or whatever. I enjoyed that.
It's like that. Kind, but inauthentic. Like the interactions exactly. that people have feel like they are not authentic in any way.
Exactly.
And of course, in this vault, as in pretty much any other vault, tragedy befalls the vault dwellers, and many very graphic murders take place. So this is something that I should have been prepared for, because Fallout as a series is fairly graphic in itself, but I was not prepared for the level of graphic violence that there is in this show, because it is buck wild.
Yeah, it's pretty grotal. Like, in the best ways.
Yeah, and it doesn't, as someone who's seen many episodes of the show, it doesn't let up at all. In fact, it gets even more gnarly as the show goes on.
I mean, yeah, if the first two episodes were any indication for me, I was like, oh, that's, you're not going to be able to put a Band-Aid or fix that with a little what's the med kit thing? The stem?
Oh, yeah, stem pack.
So, yeah, that ain't gonna cure that canoe where your head used to be.
No, yeah, that vacant space that's
yeah, you that probably sell it for advertisement. Yeah,
oh yeah,
yeah. Oh, there's that person gets the fork in the eye. Oh. Yeah, it's just like, oh, that's brutal, but feels about right for Fallout.
Yep.
Yeah.
And our protagonist Lucy. Loses her dad, ably played by Kyle MacLachlan. Always great to see him. Yep. And anything. The group that attacks the vault is led by, I'm just going to go ahead and say it, one of the coolest named characters I've ever seen, Lee Moldaver. I love that last name, Moldaver. It's so good.
Well, it's good, and it also doesn't sound like a standard evil person's name.
No, Lee Moldaver, so cool.
Yeah. No, okay. Here's another question I have from this though.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So did Moldaver and them invade the other vault? Were they a part of the other vault and left? Like, I'm trying to figure out. I want to figure out those connective pieces. And since I've only watched the two episodes, I don't have an answer to that. And I don't know if later episodes they do.
You don't know. Lucy identifies them as raiders. And I feel like the scars, maybe their behavior is a telegraph to the audience that they are people who perhaps invaded the vault. But I think that's not, I don't know if that is confirmed yet.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm just. It is. It has left enough like plot lines out there that have me invested in trying to figure out what it is, because these are some, from what I'm familiar with the Fallout mythos, these are adding like some things that just kind of didn't exist there, like like the other subject that every Fallout game I played never brought up, but it's a very excellent point, and I'm surprised I never thought about it in terms of Fallout game was just like, you know, when she's talking about like hanging out with her cousin, but hanging out with her cousin.
Oh yeah. Sure. Yeah. Because there's not a lot of, you know, it's slim pickings, but yeah, it's like, they can't do cousin stuff anymore.
Yeah. But it was just so like, oh yeah. Okay. Yeah,
that probably would happen.
Yeah. Especially when you're in a vault, controlled vault by a vault tech or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I thought those were like interesting things that I'd never even considered. The two vaults being together was another one. So I was just wondering if that's been seen in the other game series. I never played New Vegas, so I have no idea if even vaults exist in that one.
They sure do.
Okay.
Every vaults are a part of every vault. It's a big part of the mythos. And man, just let's take a moment and look and just talk about the costume design in this. They did such a good job of creating these completely believable vault dweller jumpsuits that still have like, they have extra texture. Pardon me. They have extra texture. They have extra stitching, different materials. Like, it's definitely a more sophisticated garment than what you see in the video games, just by the nature of, you know, when it was produced. But it completely captures the spirit of the original in a way that I think is just really well done. I think the production design in general on the show is second to none. This is like movie quality visuals you're getting with this show, in a way that is just a treat, a delight to behold.
Yeah, as a Wasteland Weekend participant, I've seen many a Vault Dweller jumpsuit in my time, but I've never seen one that looked like this. This is going to sound stupid. This real.
Yeah.
Like, it really does feel like it is the best approximation of, you know, probably a bunch of different versions that they kind of stitched together to make this one. But, yeah, with the extra piping, the griblies, like everything, having the Pip-Boy on one side, there's almost like a level of asymmetry that kind of sits with it too. And, you know, I'm a big fan of that. It's, yeah, no, I think it's great. And there's also an appropriate level of grime on most of everything. I would say some of the extras that I saw, I was like, you gotta throw some more mud on that. That looks a little too new. But, like, for the most part, like, the inside of the vault looks amazing. Outside of it looks great. And, like, all the, like, the different layering of things. Yeah, no, they're benefiting from the rich history that Fallout has established, but it's done with such a deft hand. And frankly, like, a lot of the stuff are, like, it's, how do I put it? A lot of it feels like if you're a fan of the game, it's fan service. Right. So, like, there's going to be a lot of Easter eggs for you, or potential Easter eggs for you to pick up on. But honestly, it never felt overdone.
No, they're very subtle and cheeky and clever in terms of how they hide their Easter eggs in a way that never feels like they're never like holding up a sign and being like, look at what we did. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
my God. Look at
wink,
it.
Wink.
Remember,
you know, like, let me drink out of this Vault Tech cup and let me make sure that the Vault Tech logo goes straight into like the camera before I drink. Yeah, no, none of that. But it exists, but I feel like the world allows for that anyway. Mm-hmm. Like it kind of works in that end. Yeah, no, the costume design, the practicalness, like all the guns and things look like they just materialized out of the game. Like, like, what is it? A junk thrower, junk gun?
Oh yes. The junk jet.
Junk jet. Thank you. That thing. I was just like, for some strange reason, my dumb ass was going like, I'll never see that. I didn't even think about it. And then episode one, I get it already. And I'm like, oh shit. But it looks so good.
Yeah.
It looks good.
They did a great job. Really, well, that was a really fantastic little detail. And I think it had like a shot baby arms, like baby doll arms, which is real fun. That's real fun business. Yeah, actually, that leads us. Let's talk about the ghoul a little bit. The third pillar of our introductory story, probably the shortest of the three. But no less interesting. This one, I thought, where we got like the campiness of Fallout from the Vault Dweller segment, which was really cool. We got the more serious, gritty version of Fallout from Maximus's story in the Brotherhood of Steel. And then we got like the goofy, wacky Fallout from the Ghoul story. Like, the ghoul is dug out of a graveyard by three like characters who are practically, you know, like cartoonish caricatures of an archetype.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it really leans into that almost Western tent that Fallout games can have.
Yep.
And it really leans into that. But, I mean, yeah, in the best way, because it's just like a bit of ultra violence within this scene. You know, it is short. And now, again, for me and for people listening who aren't familiar with Fallout as much, ghouls are like effectively people who have been mutated due to the high levels of radiation.
Yeah, it's like a reaction to the radiation. It makes you look like a corpse, but they still retain their sentience.
Got it. And they, I guess in this instance, they could live for a long time. And
yeah, he is being... I'm not sure exactly. I think, if I remember correctly, that is part of their lore. It also seems that he is being kind of kept alive in stasis almost by this nefarious figure. But yeah, you come to understand fairly quickly, not only because like Walton Goggins is playing him, but, this is the same character from the intro sequence. It's probably why he gets the shortest bit, 'cause he's already had, it's kind of split up between the beginning and the end.
Yeah. I feel like it's definitely a great bookend.
Yeah.
You and start it is, with him, you end with him type of thing almost.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and I really love how they contrast his personality and his like warmth and sort of softness in the first the flashback or the intro section of the episode, and then they contrast that with like how much of a hardened killer he has become in the 241 or something like that years since.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a long time to become.
That's a long time.
Yeah, to become bitter and resentful and everything in between. And, you know, quote unquote, probably lose a bit of your humanity along the way.
Yeah, that's definitely apparent.
Well, I don't want to just because he's just a, you know, he's got no nose and looks kind of like, you know, walking skeleton a little bit. I just didn't want to. Yeah, definitely.
No, it's his actions that make you aware of the humanity he has lost.
Yeah, it definitely has changed. But what was he has a line in there that is the reason why you hire him to be in your movies or anything. Just his delivery. It was like, I live for this. What was it? This is like. Some people, I was like, I live for this shit almost, but I'm going to look it up next time we meet. I'm going to tell you what it is because the delivery on that was stone cold, and I believed him. For that moment, I was like, he is a ghoul.
I mean, he sells it so well. He's such an amazing character. You instantly are interested in him, and just like the charisma just like oozes through the pounds and pounds of latex makeup he has on. A really great bookend. I agree. John, if it's not already apparent, what did you think of this episode of Fallout?
I was surprised by how much I liked it. And I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm just going with, you know, the series as a whole has not had that great of a track record with me. I love the story. I love the overarching everything, but actually kind of playing it through is a little bit more difficult. So I had no expectations. I wasn't really expecting anything from this at all. And I'm beyond pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed it very well. It's very well written, very well directed. The showrunner on this is excellent. Like, so far, you know, only two episodes in, so I don't know if there's going to be any sort of lulls. But I really enjoyed it, and I'm invested. And I'll definitely, you know, check out at least season one, kind of see where it leaves me see if, you know, season two is going to be coming or anything like that. But, yeah, pleasantly surprised in every way. All the actors in it are great. The practical, it's about as successful a launch as I think you could get of a show, especially based off of something that's as beloved as Fallout is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Could not agree more. I was blown away in every regard. It has become appointment viewing. We're trying to space it out, but we've been just watching an episode a night because you just can't help yourself. It is just that engaging. It's incredible. It's incredible that they have been able to faithfully adapt the universe to such a high degree of aptitude while also making an original story that is super engrossing, characters that you instantly care about or are wary of, but still are fascinated by, and just like an incredible cast. Like, it looks like they threw so much money at this, and every cent of it was utilized in a way that just made the final product better. I don't know. I can't be a more effusive in my praise for this amazing show.
Yeah, I think they spent about $160 million.
Good on the, gracious.
On the season. So
that's
yeah,
a movie budget right there.
Yeah, exactly. Movie budget towards this, it definitely shows.
My goodness. You know,
yeah, no. So, like, yeah, so impressive. And, yeah, hope. I'm for me, since I'm only two episodes in, I hope the train continues. Mm-hmm. I know I don't need the rush out on it. And for those who are listening who are kind of like, well, I don't know the game series, you don't really need to.
You really don't.
Yeah.
There's really, you'll only like, if you do know the game series, there will be parts that you're kind of like, oh, I know that. But it's not essential that you do.
Yeah, not at all. The show is paced well enough that you'll be able to pick up on these things and understand mm-hmm. it without needing. They don't even really hit you over the head with it either. So like I feel like a perfect rolled thing. So if you're in the know, you're a little you have a nice little inside bit of, oh, did you know this is from this game or this is from here or whatever. But if you don't, you can go right into it. You don't need to worry about that.
Yeah. Very well said. Hearty recommendation from us both. So check it out. Fallout on Amazon Prime TV thing, channel, video, whatever it's called. You know where to find it. Check it out. Fallout's good. But that's going to do it for us this week. I'm not going to help you. I hope you enjoyed this episode and maybe my voice and humor did help you. I don't know. That's for you to decide. Because we sure as heck enjoyed making it for you. So let's roll on into the outro. First up, we got to thank Burton M6 for all the incredible music on our show. Check out a link to his Fiverr page in our show notes. There's also links to all of our show socials, which are called socials, okay? Get with it. That's the truth. Look it up. Or don't. Actually, don't. We've got all sorts of fun socials, but the most important one, of course, is Twitter. Just kidding. Is Discord. You can join our Discord server and enjoy fun threads filled with spoilers and hot takes by all of your fellow fans and maybe new friends. But before we say goodbye, we're going to say what we say at the end of every show, that we hope that wherever you are out there, however you choose to listen to us, that you are happy and healthy. And if you're not, that's okay too. But I'm going to pass it off to John for the final word before we say goodbye.
Remember, folks, Forrest hates tea, but he likes bean water.
No!
Hey, thank you for tuning in to all my super fans. Hope you coming back again. Got a shout out to Fresca. I know you riding with me as we pull up in the Hyundai Daily City. You want the hype, I gotcha. Gotta keep it locked right here on Pop Saga. Woo! Pop Saga, let's go.